Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon or evening, and welcome to the Monday, February 19th, 2018 edition of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. As I always, I am your host, Robert Viejos, keeping it locked and loaded here in the host seat, and I'm joined by the OG of the MMA current MMA Torch crew, Sean Ennis. Sean, how's it going today, man?
Good evening. It's going great. Besides, my voice keeps cracking up like this. Excuse me.
Well, I'm glad you're finally going through puberty, man. It's been a long haul for you, so.
I walked into that one.
I just bought myself a voice crack now that I said that, so that's definitely going to happen at some point. And in the other co-host chair this week, we have longtime caller to the show, sometimes known as Rick from Alaska, Rick from somewhere in California, or formerly known as Rick Monsey. Rick, how's it going today, man?
Going good. Appreciate being part of the show, and thanks for having me.
All right, guys. Now, we can have more voices on the show than just Rick, Sean, and myself. You can get in on the show. Just give us a call, 515-605-9345, and be sure to press 1 on your dial pad. That'll let me know that you do want to come on the show and not just sit there on hold. And I will get you on, I'll get your opinion, get your take on something, get your take on what we're talking about, or ask us a question, ask a current events question, a historical question. With the format of the show, MMA and pro wrestling, that really leaves a broad area of things for us to discuss, so nothing is truly off limits in terms of questions. You could also hit us up on email, mmalivecast@gmail.com. That is mmalivecast@gmail.com. Anytime, day or night. If you have an idea for the show, something that's been bugging you, something you're curious about, send us an email and we will read it on the show. And of course, the easiest and most direct way to get a hold of us is on Twitter, @MMAtorch. Send something during the show. Go vote on our poll. We got a poll going up every Monday that'll surround a topic that we're talking about that seems to be a trending topic within the MMA community. Go ahead and check us out on Twitter. That Twitter account obviously is always being managed, but if you have a question that's more specific to the show, this is the best time live to get in on Twitter and get to us with your questions. All right, guys, with that housekeeping out of the way, we had a fairly noteworthy card this weekend, UFC Fight Night from Austin, Texas, of all places, and I guess it wouldn't be a fight night in Texas without a cowboy riding away victorious. You had Cowboy Donald Cerrone taking out Yancy Medeiros with a TKO, due to punches at 4:58 of the first round. So I think the first and most obvious question, but it's one we do have to ask, and I'll start with Rick. Is Donald Cerrone back?
Well, I think that Donald Cerrone is back as much as Yancy Medeiros was distracted. And Donald looked good towards the end of the fight, but at the beginning of it, in the first couple minutes before he got Medeiros's movements down, it was looking pretty sketchy. I saw Cowboy's head bopping back with every jab that Medeiros was connecting with. But I think if Medeiros, this is a whole another subject, but I think Medeiros is the right opponent for Cowboy to focus in on and take things seriously. So yeah, Cowboy as of now is back because of the results of this fight.
And Sean, this kind of went similar to how you predicted last week on the show. Were you at all surprised by the results? And do you feel that now Cowboy Cerrone is once again back to his winning ways?
I wasn't super surprised looking at this fight. Medeiros has always seemed pretty hittable to me. And if you're a hittable guy and Cowboy can get a hold of your movements, kind of like Rick was talking about there, if you get your movement down and he can land some flush shots, it's not going to take a whole lot for him to be able to put somebody away, because he does have, pretty technical, good striking. You know, he was in there with Masvidal, Lawler, and Till before. Those guys are all really tough outs. I don't know that I would say Cowboy is back. I think Cowboy is pretty much where he was before, just without the losses, you know, if that makes sense, because You know, he's lost to the upper echelon of the division. I don't know that we're going to see him challenge for a title again. So, you know, I think he's pretty much slotted where he's going to be, which is a main eventer of Fox Sports 1 and Fox Cards, or good, you know, guy to rely on for action fights. So this is where he kind of was before, and it's where he is now. So I think he's still there.
Yeah, and it's funny to think about when we talk about Donald Cerrone, we always make fun of how often he fights. But it really just dawned on me now. We've been doing this podcast for a little over 6 months, and this is like feels like the 100th time we've talked about what's next for Cerrone or is Cerrone in decline, because the guy just fights so dang often that it's hard for, I think, us to take stock of his career. Even in his losses, we don't really know if he's necessarily in decline, because he had that good brawl with Lawler that could have gone either way. Although I think most agree that Lawler got the decision, there was some outcry that it could have been Cerrone, and then he's just been caught a few times. And you, when somebody goes down like that quickly, you never know if it's their chin or they're just being caught. So I feel like we still don't know where the Cowboy is at. And I think that's a good assessment, not to say that he's back, because it's one of the most annoying things in MMA coverage at times. Anytime a fighter wins after a losing streak, then they're declared to be back on track. Well, you know, fighting is such a fickle beast that there are so many variables that go into a fighter being back on track or being off track. One thing I did want to get both of your guys' takes on is this seemed like a really weird situation where Yancy Medeiros had the utmost respect for his opponent in Donald Cerrone. And I appreciate this sometimes over the fake animosity that fighters will put up. But as just a MMA viewer, were either of you guys put off by the way with the tribute with the cowboy hat and him hugging Cerrone's grandmother after the fact? Did that put you off at all, Rick?
Oh, God, yeah. This is where the negativity starts. So I wasn't a fan of how buddy both fighters were acting during the fight, especially after Medeiros slipped within 2 minutes of the round. He responded by giving Cowboy a hug. Like, come on, man, at least wait till the end of the round to do that, or does it thank him for not taking advantage of it? But I want to paraphrase what Kenny Florian said during the post-fight interview when he said that a lot of Cowboy's opponents have made the mistake of becoming too buddy-buddy with him, or like fist-pumping during a good combination or something. And in turn, that'll make Cowboy more comfortable, and he'll eventually turn out the lights in his opponent. Matt Brown had that happen to him a while ago. And, you know, Matt Brown was fist-pumping and smiling, and then next thing you know, he was unconscious. And Medeiros faced the same problem. And, you know, I just... I'm not a fan of interrupting fights or the flow of fights just to congratulate the other fighter on a good combination. So I think that if Medeiros would have just treated the fight as a, you know, not as a, like, it's almost like Ronda Rousey out there just smiling and happy to be there and acknowledging the fact he's going against a dangerous opponent, you know, he can leave out all the pleasantries to afterwards. It's what I think cost him.
Jeff Van Gundy famously accused Michael Jordan of being friends with other NBA players to soften him up for their matchups, you know, claiming, oh, he goes to dinner with Barkley and Oakley the night before, and then that's why he's able to drop 55 on him the next day. I think that might undersell the ability of one Michael Jordan, who just turned 55 the other day, as a weird aside tangent. And I don't even know why I brought that into the situation. Just your rant made me think of that. I don't know if that really affects him, but I mean, Cerrone does seem like an affable guy. That'd be fun to, you know, have the typical the guy you'd want to have a beer with or hang out on the lake with and all that good stuff. I wasn't too put off by all this. It just seemed a little bit different with all the ceremonial things. It's interesting because Cerrone's a guy that he's not super old, but he's a veteran of the sport. And usually the veterans tend to come off as these old curmudgeon-y figures, and the young guys are just, you know, dying to take them out and assume the crown. It's kind of funny that we have this situation where there's a bit of a tribute being paid to it. Did you have a problem with any of this, Sean, or is it just kind of background noise?
I'm kind of neutral on the in-fight, you know, love between fighters. I don't love it. I don't hate it. But the after, the post-fight stuff, I love that. I thought that was great. When Medeiros jumps the fence to kiss his grandmother on the mouth, I thought that's fantastic. I really enjoyed that. You know, that's a first, and probably not something you're going to see very often. But I liked it. You know, I kind of dig it when guys are friends after the fight, or when they show that kind of camaraderie after the fight, because it makes MMA feel more like a sporting atmosphere and less like a you know, a blood sport. You know, I don't think that the MMA has that reputation on a wide scale anymore, but that is still out there. So when you see these guys kind of, you know, shrugging off the emotion of having just been in a fist fight with somebody and going back to, you know, this guy's a good guy, you know, and we're friends and all that kind of stuff, I think that's cool. I like it.
Yeah, and to throw in one more 90s basketball reference for some odd reason, it reminded me of, like, the old photos of the Dream Team in 92, and you have, like, Angola getting autographs from all the guys after the fact. That there was kind of a vibe of that going on with all this. Now, in the
Angola reference, I love
it. Yeah, well, I thought of Angola. I think wasn't it Barkley that said that he doesn't know what Angola is, but they're going to beat him like a drum? Or something to that effect.
I usually feel old on this show hanging out with you and Zach. But you're bringing up 1992 references. I can dig that. I can dig it.
Yeah, well, the joy of NBA TV and bored married guys watching documentaries all weekend. That's what that turns into. All right. And now with the co-main event, we had Derek Lewis with his unretirement fight, taking out Marcin Tybura in the third round at 248, also a TKO due to punches. Not a ton to talk about, I thought, in this fight, other than the fact that Derek Lewis is back. He got a win over a decent opponent. I think Tybura was a perfect guy for him to get a win over, but not someone who was super threatening. I'll start with you, Sean. Do you see him ascending back up the heavyweight ranks, or is he kind of placed, like you said earlier with Cerrone, appropriately to what his talent level is and what his upside is?
You know, that's such a different question at heavyweight than it is in any other division, because, you know, Derek Lewis, I mean, he was on a 5 or 6 fight win streak before he lost to Mark Hunt last year. And with how good he looked last night, I mean, I don't mean cardio wise, obviously, because it's not Derek Lewis's thing. But after the fight, you know, if you remember the fight with Hunt, and even after his fight with Travis Brown, he was having back problems that, you know, looked like he was really in pain. And he didn't look like that last night. You know, obviously he was exhausted, but that's never really stopped him from having power late in the fight. So it was not, it didn't come back to bite him in this case. So seeing him not being in pain after the fight and coming back to get a late round knockout, you know, I mean, at heavyweight, you're a couple knockouts away from a title shot at any given time. So I think, you know, were this a deeper division or were it just not heavyweight, yeah, Derek Lewis would be perfectly slotted. But at this point, you know, in this division, you know, how many wins is he going to need? I mean, who are you going to slot him up against besides top 10 guys at this point? You know, I mean, he's had a ton of UFC fights, and he's won, you know, most of them. So I think you stick him in there with a guy in the top 10, see how he does. And if he gets a couple of wins, you know, a title shot is not out of the question for Derek Lewis.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think his health will always be the X factor. But like you said, there is the X factor of the heavyweight division where crazy stuff happens and nobody's health is really ever on good terms in that division. There's always the threat of injury or of other illnesses that a lot of people in that division have, a lot of older fighters in that division. Lewis, comparatively young compared to a lot of the other top contenders at 33, when you compare him to guys like Fabricio Werdum and Alistair Overeem, you know, he's very, very young and very young in his fighting career. In general, I know he's had a lot of fights, but his career started in 2010, but not a lot of high level fights in his UFC career, which was looking pretty good until that Mark Hunt fight. And he looked really bad in that fight and didn't look like he prepared correctly for that fight. So I don't know to take that as what we should have the barometer for him being. And with that said, I think the UFC really likes to have him on cards. He's a fun guy. He's another affable guy. He's fun on social media, fun in the post-fight promos. He's a guy that, especially in these television cards, he fits the television fighter very, very well. Rick, where are you on Lewis and his future?
I think he did what he does best, which is pummel his opponent and then give a great post-fight interview. I was actually looking more forward to the post-fight interview than seeing a knockout at this point. I just think he's gold on the mic, and I watch every interview with him backstage that he did too. And I would like to see him go against, you know, like Alistair Overeem or Francis Ngannou or someone like that, just another action fight. I'm really kind of selfishly hoping they don't paint him up against Curtis Blaydes, because I've seen what Curtis Blaydes does against a power puncher recently, as we all have, and I just don't want a repeat of that. I would like to see Blaydes against Cain and then get Derek Lewis to fight one of the heavy hitters I mentioned before. And I also was going to say something about his opponent, Tybura. I know he's had a couple of knockouts in his UFC competition, but recently he's becoming the new Jared Rolschult in the heavyweight division for me, where he's wrestling guys down and not much adding much excitement to the fight. I could see him being knocked off the UFC roster if he loses one or two more fights. So I think Lewis made that an exciting fight, but I'm not as far as his opponent.
No, and like I said earlier, I think he's basically the guy to beat, and that seems to be his role right now within the UFC. His resume is very unimpressive. He's got the win over Orlovsky. You get a win over Orlovsky in 2017. That's not what it was 10 years ago. And then he's done the two-fight losing streak with Verdum and Lewis, obviously, this past week. So future might not be too bright for him. And he, like we said earlier, he's fairly uninteresting. Okay, and the one more fight we'll talk about from this Sunday. I keep wanting to say Saturday as a form of habit. And this one I really want to get Sean's take on because he seemed to be very enthusiastic over Twitter. Curtis Meleander taking out Thiago Alves with some amazing striking throughout that entire fight. Officially a TKO due to a knee at 4:17 of the second round. Sean, the floor is yours. What did you think of Meleander's performance?
I think this guy is a budding superstar. Just by watching the way he took out Thiago Alves. I mean, Meleander's 30 years old, so he's not a young guy. He's been out there for a while. But his striking was just, it looks so great. I mean, we're talking about Thiago Alves. Thiago Alves is only 34 years old, but he's been around forever. You know, we're not talking about Thiago Alves from 9-10 years ago, who was an elite level fighter. But at the same time, you know, the way that Meleander was able to kind of parry Thiago Alves' strikes and then come back with just that pinpoint precision and then not get too crazy, not get too excited when he was hurting Alves. And that knee, my goodness. I mean, you got Meleander 6'3", right, at 170. And he landed that knee. That knee was about, I mean, it was a standing knee. He didn't leave the ground. And the knee was about the size, about the height of Thiago Alves' head, like the top of his head at the crown of the strike. And that was just incredible. And, you know, I think this guy, the sky is the limit for him. You know, he's entering his athletic prime at this point, or he's right in the middle of it, really. And, you know, I think the sky's the limit for him. I'm real excited to see who they match him up with. I think he's got a real clear path here to breach the top of the welterweight division. You know, having Thiago Alves as your first fight on the main card of the Fox Sports 1 card. I mean, that's a real nice visibility for your first fight, and to get a highlight reel knockout like that of a known entity, it's a great thing. You know, and they don't have to rush anything. Welterweight's a stacked division. You can give this guy 6, 7, 8 fights, you know, before you even get him into the top 10 if you really want to. So yeah, I'm real excited to see what they do with him, and I'm excited to see what comes next. To me, this, you know, I know Michael Venom Page is younger than Meleander. I don't know if he's that much younger, really. But this that's what he reminded me of, except a little bit more disciplined, a little bit less flashy than MVP. But I'm excited to see him next time.
Yeah, and it feels like every Monday we come on this show and we discuss a new prospect in the welterweight division and how exciting that division is going to be in the future. Hopefully it doesn't go the way of the middleweight division. That I feel like if we would have had the show a year ago, that's what we would be saying about the middleweight division. But it really seems in the welterweight division, there's a guy every weekend that you've kind of heard of but don't know a ton about, and they make a statement every week. And this is still the division that houses guys like Robbie Lawler and Carlos Condit, you know, at the top of the division, kind of the old guard of that division. I am so excited to see what happens throughout the future of welterweight, because it's loaded. It's loaded with young prospects and with a healthy mix of veterans. To your earlier question, look, just browsing through their Wikipedia pages, it looks like Page is a little bit older. They're both 30. So it's just...
Oh, he's older?
Yeah.
That.
It's just a matter of months, if I'm doing my math correctly on the... it's literally a matter of months. Page will turn 31 in April, whereas Meleander will turn 31 in December. So you're really splitting hairs. I think that's a fair comparison, specifically in the world of MMA highlight flying knees. Both of those guys can really dish those out like nobody's business. Rick, what do you think of the fight? What do you think of Meleander's prospects going forward?
I think he has really good prospects. And like Sean was saying, we don't need to feed him to the top 15 anytime soon. But I did enjoy, like, the overexcitement when he thought he had knocked him out earlier. And he, like, did the celebration when he put his hands in the air. And then he, oh, no, this fight's not over. So finally in the second round when he got that knee and he got kind of the walk-away knockout he was looking for, then it was even that much more sweet. And I'm excited to watch his career go on and eventually include him in some parlay bets.
You guys talked about not having him at the top of the card, and I think that kind of retrofits into my earlier point, is that we can have great fights in welterweight division with unranked guys or guys in that 10 to 15 range, and they won't feel like small-time fights as long as the UFC promotes them correctly. But I'm gonna stop right there gushing about the welterweight division and all of its young prospects. Instead, what I'm going to do is I'm going to make an admission to you right here on air, Rick. I got to tell you, man, I know absolutely nothing about wine. Does that surprise you?
That does not surprise me, no.
Okay, I don't know if that's a compliment or an insult, but I'll take it. I'll take it as a compliment.
Neither do I, so it's okay.
I'll take it as a combination of both. I don't know a lot about wine. I like wine on occasion. I'll take sips of people's wines at holiday parties. But then these people, the wine guys or wine girls, they start telling me all about all the properties of this wine and the how it tastes and all this stuff. And I have no idea what they're talking about. They're like me trying to talk to my wife about MMA and pro wrestling. There's just a blank look on the face and no communication is happening. But I still do enjoy the wine. So you know what? I think that makes a perfect reason to sign up for Wink. That is WINC, Wink. And what Wink does is it makes it easy to discover great wine. Because Wink's wine experts select wines matched to your taste, personalized just for you, ship right to your door, and they start just at $13 a bottle. There's nothing like coming home to a delicious box of Wink wine selected just for you. It's, you know, quite honestly, the best day of your month, but the best day of any month, to be honest with you. You know, when you're asking that person that I'm sipping the wine off of at Thanksgiving, they don't know what my tastes are, but Wink, they get an idea of what my tastes are, because all I do with Wink is I just fill out Wink's palate profile quiz. Answer simple questions that the average store clerk or maybe my aunt on Thanksgiving wouldn't know or wouldn't, you know, take the time to translate that into a recommendation for wine. They ask, you know, questions that you might not even associate with drinking wine, such as how do you take your coffee or how do you feel about blueberries? Then Wink sends wines curated just to your taste. The more wines you rate, the more personalized your monthly selections become. So really, it becomes a process of the more Wink gets to know you, the more they can really tailor everything you drink and send you that bottle every month. There are no membership fees. You could skip any month and you could cancel it any time. You get delicious new wines every week, like the new popular Summer Water Rose. Shipping is completely covered, and if you don't like the bottle they send you, they'll replace it with a bottle you will love, and they don't ask any questions. Discover great wine today. Go to trywink.com/pwtorch, and you'll get $20 off your first shipment. That's trywink.com/pwtorch for $20 off. trywink.com/pwtorch. Something I'm definitely going to be diving into in these months as the weather starts warming up and getting into the wines that'll perfectly fit how I'm feeling in these upcoming months. All right, guys, that's enough about that for now. But you know what? Let's go to a break. And when we come back, it looks like we got the caller. Our caller board is completely filled up for the moment, but don't let that stop you. 515-605-9345. Get it in line and we'll be sure to get you on. Let's go to break.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Don't forget, you can also email and tweet at the show. The email address, MMALivecast@gmail.com. Our Twitter handle is @MMAtorch. All right, guys, let's get to some callers here. And it looks like first on hold, I believe This will be Valentin from Russia. Valentin, is that you?
Yeah, hey guys.
Hey Valentin, how's it going, man?
I wanted to ask you about James Vick. What do you think about his performance yesterday, and do you think he will fight a big name opponent next time?
Sean, what do you think about Vick's near future?
I thought Vick looked pretty good last night. You know, Trinaldo is a tough opponent, even though, you know, he seems to have been around forever and he's about 150 years old now. He's a tough dude, and he's been around for a long time. So I think Vick did what he had to do to win last night. You know, not all his fights are going to be highlights, especially with a guy that fights like Trinaldo. I'm bullish on Vick. I think he's got a pretty good run ahead of him, or at least the potential for it. You know, his only loss is to Beneil Dariush, and he hasn't really fought the top of the division yet. But I think they're going to probably get him in there with, you know, it would surprise me if he's not in there with a guy in at least the top 15, probably the lower end of the top 10 in the next fight.
Yeah, this past week on The Fix, Todd Martin made the note about how Vick doesn't have a high profile because he generally fights uninspiring opponents. Even though he beats so many of those guys, he doesn't get elevated by them. He laid out how Trinaldo was that prototypical guy that if he beats him, okay, he beat a guy that's almost 40, but he's a very tough out. I think Vick really showed himself well this weekend, and he'll be moving up the ladder. You know, that lightweight division is pretty crowded at the top, but when you start getting a little deeper, there are some spaces to grow, so I think he'll be okay. What's your take on James Vick, Rick?
Well, I didn't realize until I saw him standing across from Trinaldo how tall he is for that division. I keep forgetting that he's a giant amongst those guys. I thought he looked good. I thought he was a little probably frustrated from his hometown kind of booing him towards the third round, but he picked up the pace, and I expect to see him fighting hopefully someone in the top 10 pretty soon. Marketability-wise, they got a little bit of work to do with him. Even in Texas, him getting booed and whatnot isn't a good sign.
Yeah, I thought in general the Texas crowd was a little bit weird. I never understand, even when we talk about pro wrestling crowds, if Texas, what Texas is, because it's a lot of big city areas that they go to, but yet they seem to have that more Midwestern take on things. So I can never quite figure out what the Texas crowd is, and I thought they had themselves a weird night last night in general. What else do you got for us, Valentin?
It seems like Shawn Michaels was impressed by his sidekick that looked like switching music yesterday.
there was a few going around, actually, on the Access card. I don't know if any of you guys caught that. There was a Sweet Chin Music that it's been shared on Twitter, so go check it out. We were talking last week about the use of Sweet Chin Music within MMA, so that actually did happen over this past week. Sorry about that, Valentin, for cutting you off. What else do you got?
Nah, that's all I had for the day.
All right, man. We'll talk to you next week. Have a great day at work.
Thank you.
All right. Valentin drops off. That leaves a line open for you at 515-605-9345. We'll go to our next caller. He's been on hold for a while. I believe this is Ryan in Maryland. Ryan, what do you got for us today?
Yeah, my first question is on the potential Floyd Mayweather-Conor McGregor rematch. If that would be held under kickboxing rules, who do you think the favorite would be?
Off of first glance, I mean, I haven't thought about it off of kickboxing rules. I would think McGregor, but that's not so clear cut. There's still a lot of elements of the boxing style in kickboxing and the foot and head movement that I think Mayweather would do very well. I would favor McGregor, but I'd have to dig deeper into it, and I could easily come off of that stance. What do you think, Rick?
Yeah, I would pick McGregor too. He's just got, I think he has the reach advantage. I know he's definitely taller, but I think just with being able to kick and whatnot, he's already got an edge over Floyd.
What about you, Sean? Would you give the nod to McGregor if they were fighting in glory?
Yeah, I'm there with you, Rob. My initial thought would be to give it to McGregor, but I don't know enough about the differences and the intricacies of footwork and whatnot between MMA and kickboxing to know for sure who would have the real advantage there.
In general, though, I like the idea of like Mayweather and McGregor just going through all the different martial arts and testing themselves. Like, I can't wait for them to get into like a capoeira competition with each other to see who can do better there. But I mean, I don't think that's going to happen. But it's a fun thing to think about. What else you got for us, Ryan?
I have a question on women's MMA. I noticed a lot of the Mesa girls I've seen fight have it like braided. And is there any fighters that have long hair that are female that don't have it braided? And is there any instance where maybe that caused them to fight, that the hair got in their eyes and they couldn't see and they got knocked out?
I can't think of any off the top of my head. Occasionally you'll see a bit of a ponytail going down. But generally, those girls have those things in tight. You think about Joanna Champion. It looks like it's a painful experience the way her hair is braided. You know, we talked about boxing a minute ago. There is the thing they call the boxer braid, which does it hangs down on women's hair. But you don't really see that in MMA because I think it could be used to a disadvantage. Any thoughts about that, Sean?
No, I think you pretty much hit it there.
Rick, any recollection of long hair really costing a fighter?
For women, no. I just think for men, some of the guys who probably should have their hair braided and don't, every punch that they get in the face looks that much more dramatic. So anytime someone has long hair, I think it's a good idea just to pack it down to not over-exaggerate some of the action that's happening.
Yeah, and I always do wonder, because you will see a lot of training footage with these women where they have their hair put up but not necessarily – you know, tied down the way it is during a fight, and how much different that feels on fight night. That'd be something to ask a female fighter or a female fan on the show. I don't know that we have the best perspective on women's hair in MMA on this show, but would try our best to get with that. It is an interesting question, though, Ryan. Anything else for us?
My final question would be, is there a reason why the fans always arrive later? A lot of times it seems like the arena's empty during those MMA shows. I know I was late getting to one just because my buddy had my ticket on his phone and I had to wait for him to get off work, but I don't think that's the case for most people. So what's the reasoning behind that?
Any insight there, Rick?
I was actually wondering that myself this last fight night, because when you're watching the fight pass prelims, there's entire sections that weren't filled like at all. It was just glaring. I think that in the future, it'd be nice if the UFC can just work out with the arena that those chairs not be white, so it's not as noticeable. But I personally try to at least watch the fights from the beginning if I can, and especially if you pay the money. You know, I don't see that happening as much in wrestling, because I think wrestling is considered more of a overall show where people are just going there for the spectacle at the beginning. But in a lot of time in fighting, like, a lot of people are there because of the last couple fights or some fights on the main card and they don't know who these people are, you know, like in boxing as well. So they don't either tune in or show up till a little bit later. But it is kind of weird, especially people sitting in the front row, not to be there to get their money's worth, but maybe it's not as big of a deal for them.
Yeah. Sean, any thoughts on the late arriving crowds every weekend in the UFC?
Well, I think it's got something to do with the less compelling fights on the bottom of the card. You know, it's anecdotal, of course, but, you know, back in my day, we had a lot more compelling fights at the bottom of the card. You know, back when there was like the clamoring to show the unaired prelims and things like that, before they were even on Facebook. But now you don't. There's just not a lot going on at that point. You know, at that portion of the card. You know, now for me, like Rick said, if I'm going to a card, I'm going at the beginning to watch, you know, the whole thing, because I paid for the whole thing, even though, and this is also part of it. I mean, you're there for like 6 hours, you know, and there's a lot of downtime between those televised fights. You know, you don't even have commercials to watch where people are watching the commercials and they're watching the guys at the desk. You know, if you've got a card like last night where, you know, every card on the undercard almost was a first round stoppage, you know, you're sitting around for a long time in that arena, and there's not a whole lot to do there except spend money. So I can kind of see why people show up late.
Yeah, I'm going to hit off of your two points there. One, it's just a very long card. Very few sporting events from the beginning to the end last as long as an MMA card does. When you think about it, it starts, you know, early, depending on what your time zone is, maybe like early in the afternoon and goes to late at night. That's a long that's a long way to go. When you think about it, think about people who cover MMA from their homes, as we do sometimes at The Torch, where you're sitting there with your own personal restroom, drinks in the refrigerator, food, all the comforts of home, and it is still a slog to get through an MMA card from beginning to end. I prefer, if I don't have to cover it for the site, to watch them in pieces because they're so long. And you talked about the spending money factor. I have spoken to people in the past who, when this has come up, people who have gone to some big Ronda Rousey fights and the like, who say, well, you know, you got to think about where your value for money really goes, because once you get into an arena, especially if you're going to be there for a long time with all to watch all the fights, the price of concessions is just out of control, as you would expect, as it is at any sporting event. So when you're in there for that long, and especially if you're not the hardcore fan that doesn't care about every little detail on every early prelim or even every FS1 prelim, you're probably there as in a vacation weekend to have a good time. You're in Vegas. They're generally in these fun cities, especially for the big pay-per-views. So maybe you want to hang out. I know, you know, in Vegas, there's a TV anywhere, so you can still watch those fights, have much cheaper food and drinks than when you get in there, and then get in there to see what you paid to see. MMA, and I think Rick hit the nail on the head, it's still marketed the way pro wrestling used to be, where it's marketed as the fighter A versus fighter B, and maybe fighter C versus fighter D, whereas something like a wrestling event is marketed as the brands. You're there to see that entire show, and you don't know when that fight's going to happen. An MMA card, it's very predictable, with the very few exceptions, unless there's a swing bout or something. You can go to the website for any of these organizations, and you know exactly the order of the fights you're going to see, so you can kind of plan accordingly. I will give credit, though. Everyone always dogs on the rich people who only come into their seats for the big fights. I believe it's John Frusciante from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Whenever he goes to a card in California, he's always there ringside from like the opening bell to the very end. He's like the only rich guy to do that, so I got to give him props for that. Anything else for us, Ryan?
No, I just have to agree with you on the food being expensive, because they do a pretty thorough check on you through the metal detector, and you have to take everything out of your pocket, so there's no sneaking any food in there. And so it's usually about $6 or $7 a piece at the arena when you get there.
Yeah,
that's even for a small market like State College. So I can imagine what it's like in New York City or
right.
Las Vegas.
And even if you eat beforehand, it's still a 6-hour show. You're going to need to eat again, so that kind of gets mitigated right there. All right, Ryan, call us again next week. And I always appreciate the questions. It always makes me think about stuff that I probably wouldn't be thinking about otherwise. It makes me sometimes do follow-up research, which I really like doing on those sort of long-form topics. Let's take one more caller before we go to break. 509, what's your name and location?
Am I on?
You're on.
Am I on?
Yeah, what's your name and location, man?
Yep, you're with us.
Oh, yeah, hi, sorry. This is Jared. I'm from Washington State. First time caller with you guys. I'm a long-time PW Torch EIT member. Just never really get a call you guys due to my work schedule, but I'm pretty excited to.
Cool, Jared. You got a question for us?
Yeah, I got a couple, actually. Two unrelated ones. You know, there's not a lot of independent wrestling where I live in my neck of the woods, but there's a relatively newer promotion that's got a few shows, and they're coming from Oregon, and they're advertising to come up later, a gentleman by the name of Tom Lawler, and I know he's a former UFC guy. I just don't know too much about him. You guys give me a little insight on him.
Well, he is certainly a character, to be sure, and fits within the pro wrestling mold very, very much. Sean, why don't you give us a little primer on Filthy Tom Lawler?
Yeah, Filthy Tom Lawler. He was he was on the Ultimate Fighter, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right, Rob? You remember?
That sounds right.
Yeah,
he was on season 8.
Yeah, he was on the Ultimate Fighter a while back. Started in MMA around 10, 11 years ago. Then went to the Ultimate Fighter, was kind of a middling UFC fighter for a few years. I think he was probably in the UFC for 6-7 years, something like that. You know, mostly stuck around on the basis of his personality. You know, he would have these crazy ring entrances, which rarely got shown because especially towards the end of his run, because he wasn't on the main cards. So, and they, you know, they tend to cut out the ring entrances for that portion of the card. But he would, you know, I remember one time where he dressed up like Hulk Hogan, you know, had the mustache and the Hulkamania shirt and everything. And of course, that whole thing never really aired. But he would dress up at the weigh-ins too, and have these crazy outfits there. And that was, you know, he was a fun guy to have around, you know, and had some success. You know, he ended up with a record. I've got his page up here, about 10-6. Hasn't fought since for a couple of years, since 2016, March of 2016. It looks like. Where he lost to Corey Anderson. But yeah, kind of, you know, a little bit above a 500 average or 500 fighter. And let's see, he was, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and about 6-6 in the UFC or thereabouts. So, you know, not an elite level fighter, but definitely I would say fits in personality wise into the wrestling world, kind of like a Matt Riddle type, as far as that's concerned. I don't know if he'll be as successful as Matt Riddle has proven to be, in the ring, but remains to be seen for sure.
Rick, anything to add on Tom Lawler?
Nope, nothing to add. Sean covered it pretty well.
I believe he was in trouble for some PED usage, and he creates a lot of dialogue about that on Twitter, about what should be allowed and what shouldn't be allowed. And if I remember correctly, I believe it was him that came to the ring dressed like one of the Village People and with the YMCA song. And Dana White, like, lost his mind after the fact on it. That's back when Helwani used to speak to him. Dana White was furious about that. And it's so funny because I think now something like that would probably totally fly in MMA. But back in the non-entertainment era of the UFC, that was such a big no-no, the way he did that. And Dana White was not happy about any of that. Hold on one second here. Jared, what else you got for us?
Well, piggybacking off of a previous caller's question talking about the women and their hair, it kind of got me thinking when Ronda Rousey makes her debut, well, what do you think her outfit's going to look like? Kind of a fun question, but I mean, we've seen what Brock Lesnar did. Looks pretty much like he did in the UFC, other than the addition of boots. What do you see Ronda doing?
Huh, that's a good question that I hadn't really considered. But that's definitely an interesting take. I don't know if she'll be out there in, like, you know, in the trunks and a tank top, you know, mimicking her MMA look. Brock was a bit of a different case because he was still at the sponsorship era of MMA, and he's been able to carry those sponsorships over to his WWE run, and it's kind of added to his mystique, the fact that he just looks totally different than everybody else. He looks like the guy who just, you know, stepped out of the octagon and is stepping into the WWE. You mentioned Matt Riddle earlier. He has that MMA look. Shayna Baszler, not so much, although, you know, her style is uniquely MMA. You've got Sonya Deville, who kind of wears the robe and is aesthetically MMA, but not completely. I am very curious. I have no earthly idea what that would be. That's something I want to think about more. But I think this is something, Rick, this kind of seems like right in your wheelhouse. What do you think Ronda will be dressed like for her first match?
Well, you mentioned Shayna Baszler, and that's kind of who I was looking at when I was thinking of maybe Ronda's attire emulating, where Shayna's got an MMA-style attire where it's not incredible. It's still, you know, showing some skin and showing some areas that maybe wouldn't be done, even though she kind of did dress like this anyway at UFC. And in fact, I'm looking at her UFC and her wrestling attire. They're near identical. So I think that she'll follow the way of Shayna Baszler if she takes any advice from her and just do something that's similar, but maybe not just all black Reebok, obviously, but, you know, something with her own brand on it. But I don't see, like, Brock Lesnar brought over his own brands and put them on his trunks. I just see Ronda going more branding herself and, you know, having something similar to Shayna.
Sean, what do you think Rousey's going to walk out with?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would have to kind of think that kind of same lines as Rick. You know, I have to imagine she'll go with an MMA theme, though maybe have her own kind of signature, you know, logo or style or whatever. At least for the merchandise purposes. Hopefully she's not going to stick with the Roddy Piper aesthetic. You know, to me, that's it's a little bit worn, but, you know, it's well worn by Roddy Piper, obviously. But, you know, hopefully we move on from that and she kind of gets her own look. But I do think it'll be an MMA theme, but I don't think it'll be quite as on that side of the fence as Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, and it is interesting because her star power, when we talk about how it extended outside of the typical mixed martial arts world, she was marketed as an attractive woman. She was in the Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition, and we certainly know that the WWE is not above sending their female competitors out with some, questionable looking outfits for a competitor or an athlete to dress in. So there is still the possibility of that as well. But I would recommend leaning more. You want to get that MMA vibe to her, that really the mean Ronda Rousey, the mean mugging Ronda Rousey, if that's the way they go. So I would hope that would be the direction that they take it. Jared, what else you got?
Battlefield Fit Mass, I want to say I love everything the Torch family does, long time subscriber, go VIP if you haven't.
All right, man. Thanks for the plug. Please call us again if you can. If not, just shoot us an email and we'll read it. Thanks a lot, man. All right, and Jared drops off. Cool to have a first-time caller. We have our regular rotation of callers. We got Valentin, usually comes in all the way from Russia. We got Ryan from Maryland. We got a new caller, Jared. And did you guys catch where he was from? I actually missed that now that I'm thinking about that.
Washington State.
Okay, so now we're really covering the entire map of the United States coast to coast. We've got that covered. If Kylan from New Jersey calls in, we're getting the map. And, of course, we've got our international appeal. We're huge in Russia, so we just got to keep that feather in our cap. All right, guys, let's go to another break, and then when we come back, we'll look ahead to this weekend's UFC card and talk a little CM Punk, Floyd Mayweather. Should be exciting.
Rich Fan, formerly of the Primetime Friday Laughcast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here because Saturday nights on the live cast are officially all right for diving.
Tons of great discourse coming out of the Torch family this week. You had Bruce Mitchell writing a column about the New Day's portrayal on television. Then you had Bruce Mitchell going with the boss Wade Keller on his podcast to explain his take on things. And then you had Rich Fan on Saturday kind of bookending it with his perspective. And the perspectives are very much diverse and not always happening on every other website. And I'm not just saying that because we're broadcasting this through the Torch platform, but that really is something to check out. No matter what side of the argument you're on, I think you'll find some good intellectual discussion within the Torch strata this week. All right, guys. Speaking of this week and upcoming events, let's talk about the UFC card. This weekend, we have Josh Emmett taking on Jeremy Stephens in the main event from Orlando, Florida. This is Josh Emmett's first fight since that brutal KO over Ricardo Lamas. A lot of talk that should Josh Emmett be this high on the card so soon. Max Holloway has kind of expressed his frustration of how quickly the ascent has been for Emmett. But, if you have any questions about him, it definitely will be answered this weekend by a very game Jeremy Stephens, who had that brutal knockout of Du Ho Choi back in January. These guys are fighting fairly quickly. Good to see both guys who are fun fighters back on the card doing their thing. Who do you got in this fight, Sean?
This is a tough fight to call for me. Every time I count out Jeremy Stephens, he comes and knocks somebody out. And, I would not put it past him to do it again here to Josh Emmett. The thing is with Emmett, he got that win over Ricardo Lamas. A knockout of Ricardo Lamas is no small thing. Ricardo Lamas has an iron chin and has taken a lot of tough shots. And Emmett just iced him. And this is also the same guy that has a loss to Desmond Green, and I can't even place Desmond Green in my head. So, to get in there with Jeremy Stephens, Emmett has never been stopped. And that is pretty much Stephens' game. He's going to win a fight. He's usually going to win by stoppage.
And Stevens is also a hard knockout. You know, he's only been stopped by strikes once he's 27-14. So he's been around for a long time. This is not a guy that's an easy out. So this is a really tough fight to call. Gun to my head, I'm going to go with, I'm going to go with Stevens just as a hunch, but it would not surprise me if Emick ends up winning this fight. I think this is a heck of a fight, and, it's kind of a low key heck of a fight because it's not two huge names for the top of a card, but especially for a Fox card, but I think this one is going to deliver action wise. And it's a compelling fight for sure.
Rick, who do you got in this one?
I think this is going to be the third win in a row for Jeremy Stevens in his campaign to finally make us all realize who the heck he is. I think Josh Emmett looked good in his last fight, but I don't know. I didn't see this as a resurgence for his career, or now that he's going to be knocking people out left and right. I think he just had caught Ricardo Lamas with the near perfect shot. And as far as this being a main event, I see Jeremy Stevens being one half of the main event, as he's already done it, like you said, recently against Tu Hoochoy, and arguably one of the best fights for, one round fights I've seen, or two round fights I've seen in a while. But that fight was incredible. And then, he's just been on tear lately. So I see him as tear to continue. And I think Josh Emmett will put up a good fight, but whether or not there be a finish in here, it's debatable. This could go all five rounds.
Yeah, I tend to have the anti-Jeremy Stevens bias as well, and I don't know where that comes from. I don't know if because personally he seems to be a little bit unlikable, or maybe his knockout reputation seemed to be more of reputation until recently when he really got back to laying his fist very heavily. But I'm going to take him here. I just feel like there's more of what we know. I think Stevens ends up being the better fighter here, and I do think Emmett is still very much this kind of unrefined product that, despite the big knockout loss, like Sean said, you can't take that away from him. I don't think he's going to be at that level. In the co-main event, we have a fun little fight in the women's strawweight division, which pits Jessica Andrade versus Tisha Torres. Jessica Andrade, of course, coming off of that massacre back a couple of months ago over Claudia Gadelha back in September. Wow, it doesn't even seem like that long. On our year in review show, I actually had that as one of my three fights of the year, not because it was a competitive back and forth fight. It was just compelling the way she just dismantled Claudia in that fight. Taking on Tisha Torres, coming off a good win over Michelle Waterson in the opener at UFC 218. I'm going to take Andrade here. I've said before, my stance used to be that Andrade was the best featherweight in the world that wasn't Joanna Jędrzejczyk. And now I don't know if that it can be the case that Joanna's no longer the champion, but I still think Andrade is very much in that mix. So I'm going to take her here, and I think she keeps on rolling. What do you think, Rick?
I agree with you. I think Andrade is going to win it. And for just mainly the fact that Andrade has been able to finish fights. I know Tisha, not her last fight, the fight beforehand, she had got a finish finally, rear naked choke. And she was just bawling because that just never happens with her. She's able to kind of be on the bike and be moving back and landing shots here and there. But I don't think that will happen. I think she's going to get steamrolled in this one by Jessica Andrade. And this does have the potential to have a finish in it.
Sean, clean sweep here with Andrade?
Yeah, it is a clean sweep. I'm going to go with Andrade here. I think Tisha Torres does make a fight of it. But if there's a stoppage, I think it'll be late. I do think Andrade takes it pretty clearly.
And in the third fight from the top, we have the always active Oven St. Preux taking on Yair Latifi. Oven St. Preux has had himself a nice little run lately. He had a really good 2017 after losing to Volkan Ozdemir earlier. Took out a few guys with his signature Von Preux choke, or Von Preux choke as he likes to call it. And then he had a head kick KO of Corey Anderson back at the great UFC 217 card. Kind of got buried with as notable as that card was, but St. Preux is on a real roll here. You have your Latifi. Got a win over Tyson Pedro at UFC 215, but then hadn't fought at all until back since 2016 when he lost to Ryan Bader, which I believe was Bader's last fight within the UFC. So not a lot going on for Latifi lately. I see St. Preux's streak continuing here. He's the quiet story within the light heavyweight division because I think he's viewed as a level below the top guys, but it's in that next tier mix. He's definitely making a case for himself after his career seemed to be just sputtering for a little while. What do you think, Sean? Does he get the job done here?
Yeah, I think he probably does. You know, the thing with St. Preux is he doesn't strike me as the most cerebral fighter. He does weird things sometimes. And, you know, if you do that against a dangerous enough opponent, you're going to pay for it. You know, he's got like a 7-inch height advantage over Leo Latifi. This is going to look real weird with those two in the cage together. Latifi's 5'8", and St. Preux is 6'3". So I think it's going to look very strange, but I think he's going to do enough to get the job done. He may get himself in trouble, you know, and get stung a little bit by Latifi. But in fact, I think he probably will do that. but I think he's going to do enough to get the job done at the end of the night.
Clean sweep, Rick, on Ovin St. Preux rolling here.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, you're right. Their reaches, their height, everything's so drastically different. Latifi's the kind of guy who just seems very durable. Like, you know, he's not an easy win for anyone by any measure. But he just hasn't fought that much, like you mentioned before, recently. And his last fight against Tyson Pedro was just kind of like, it was a, you know, unanimous decision fight. But he didn't, I feel like, show that he's becoming this top guy. He's just kind of a worker who wins a lot, and OSP will just have his way with him, but at least by the third round.
And opening the card, we got Mike Perry fighting again, taking on Max Griffin. Mike Perry kind of has earned the reputation, I guess, as the dollar store Cowboy Cerrone, as the fun welterweight that knocks a lot of people out but does take a loss here or there. He last fought on that UFC on Fox card back in December. He lost that decision, very good fight, to Santiago Ponzinibbio. He takes on Max Griffin, who's only 1-2 in the UFC. I think Perry's going to roll here like he does. He's going to say something kind of weird after the fight like he always does, and I think it's just going to be that predictable pattern where he gets to a certain level, but maybe he's never going to go quite over the top. What do you think, Rick?
Oh, yeah, I think I agree with you. I think Perry will, you know, take him out. I don't know if he'll finish him, but I'm looking up Griffin. I had to look Griffin up because I wasn't very familiar with her and with him, sorry. And he definitely looks like someone they're feeding to Perry to get that win back. And there's not a coincidence he's back on the Fox card. They want to get maximum exposure for Perry and try to make him into a superstar. And hopefully, you know, get that CM Punk fight going that I really want to see down the road.
Because you're like the party of one in that. Well, maybe not, because a lot of MMA fans just hate CM Punk. So maybe they want to see Mike Perry just pummel him. What do you think, Sean, in the Perry-Griffin fight? Who do you got, Sean?
Well, it is definitely a group of people who hate CM Punk if they want to see him fight Mike Perry, because he will get murdered in that fight. But, yeah, I do think Mike Perry rolls here. They've got him on the opening fight at Fox. That's where he's going to be. That's pretty much his slot, every other Fox card to open up the main card. And he'll get his win here. And I really like the Dollar Store Cowboy as his new nickname. I think that should be mm-hmm. We should petition that to be his new nickname, Dollar Store Cowboy.
Okay, well, let's just email Ben Folks and Chad Dundas, because they seem to have a nickname factory going on in their podcast. So they can get it going. They got Bobby Knuckles kind of over, except for the fact that he won't embrace it himself. But other than that, the MMA community just refers to that Robert Whittaker as Bobby Knuckles. So we can do that. Dollar Store Cowboy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds cool. It sounds like a bad movie that like John Travolta would have been in like the hashtag 70s or something. So I don't know. This card in general, it on paper, it looks like a great FS1 card. But the star power, it seems a little bit starved for a Fox card. With that said, these are decent fights, you know, that I'm kind of excited to see. And the pacing on Fox cards is so much better than the pacing on FS1 cards. You got Henan Barão and Brian Kelleher, the main event of the prelim card. You got a Sarah McMahon fight, Alan Joban, Angela Hill, Smiling Sam Alvey. There's some good names on this card. Should be a breezy way to get through a UFC card, more so than normal. Now, we talked about CM Punk versus Mike Perry. And I guess that'll be a segue to our weekly, who are we going to book CM Punk with, and what is further becoming, as a Zach Hader and Hujuji on this show, how are we going to finally book CM Punk versus Floyd Mayweather? A fight that seems like the most ridiculous thing ever, except for that it kind of doesn't, because the guys are similar in experience when it comes to MMA. They're of similar height, seemingly of similar skill level, although books have been taking bets on this fight and its potential. And surprisingly, we keep trying to find a fighter that CM Punk would be favored against in the UFC. Well, we haven't found that, but we found a professional boxer that he apparently would be favored against in Floyd Mayweather. So if you want to take a long shot on this fight happening and CM Punk winning, you got the favorite hit odds. I would point to two MMA Torch. Original host of this show, Mike Hisko, wrote a column for us this weekend where he laid out actually a compelling argument of why this fight should happen. You know, go ahead and read it because it's pretty well worded and it has some good arguments. But one of the things his main thesis was it solves the CM Punk problem that you have, that you have nobody good to really book him with, but you want to maximize the value of having such a big star. I wouldn't call him a mainstream star, but a star within the combat sports world on your hands. And obviously, Floyd Mayweather is a huge star. Floyd Mayweather is a mainstream star. I like this fight. I've liked this fight for a long time. I don't know if it's going to happen. I don't really think it's going to happen. I think if there is a Mayweather entrance into the UFC, which I highly doubt, it would be in another Conor McGregor like mega bout. I don't know. You know, we got the question earlier about kickboxing. Perhaps that could be a thing. I doubt that would happen, but The Mayweather thing, Mayweather within the MMA realm, just is not going away. So let me ask you once and for all, Sean, what is your take on CM Punk versus Floyd Mayweather? Would you actually kind of like to see it?
Would I like to see it? I don't know. I can't say that I would because then. Just because of the implications, like the fight itself is a little bit interesting, but the implication would be that the UFC then is always going to be looking for some kind of circus fight, which I guess on the surface of things is not the worst thing in the world. You know, this is MMA after all, it's kind of the roots of MMA, but I mean, just these goofy things that won't go away, like CM Punk and Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor, the triumvirate of things that won't go away and yet are never here to begin with. Yeah, I mean, the fight is somewhat interesting. I think, I don't know, man, I almost started breaking it down a little bit. I don't even want to do that, but yeah, I kind of want to see it for the car crash aspect of it. But from an aspect of, I can't get away from these goofy rumors. I just want it to go away.
I'm with you on the rumor front. I just like, and it's not even these two guys, it's Conor McGregor mostly. I just hate any news involving any of them anymore because none of it is actual news. It's one little comment made to a stupid TMZ reporter, and then a whole article gets written about it, and it's just nothing. And I think there's some fatigue there.
Exactly.
I cut you off there, Sean.
And putting Nate Diaz in there too. I put Nate Diaz in that category too. I mean, I love watching Nate Diaz, but it's all talk with him and McGregor and Mayweather and all those guys. It's just talk, and I'm tired of it.
Yeah, it does really just feel like that sort of celebrity trash news that you can go other places to get in general. With that said, if you take away who CM Punk is, the pro wrestler, the curmudgeonly personality and all that, the anti-establishment dude, and if you take away who Floyd Mayweather is, this big drawing boxer, very unlikable person in his own right, the fight wouldn't be half bad. And I think that's the one thing that's kind of interesting here. Something that gets lost, Max Kellerman of ESPN initially brought that up. One thing about Mayweather-McGregor that actually made it work is you have two very big draws that just happen to be the same size at the same time. That's not always going to happen in combat sports. So that this fight does have that going for it. Rick, where are you with all this? Is this just ridiculous speculative talk? Is this a fight you would actually want to see? Or are you just sick of this whole orbit of the Diaz-McGregor-Mayweather?
I'm a little sick of it, but at the same time, I was eating it up last time McGregor and Mayweather had fought. I was every piece of information I was taking, and it was pretty exciting. But even just yesterday, 12 hours ago, ESPN saying McGregor news, Floyd has walked out of rematch talks, you know, and I didn't even realize there was a big realistic negotiation going on right now. So I just, all this is just happening so often. It's just, you become desensitized to it. And for CM Punk now to be in the conversation, I think is kind of hilarious. When I was reading that article, Hisko's article, which is great, by the way, he pointed out that CM Punk had got $500,000 plus pay-per-view points to fight Mickey Gall when he did. And I knew they were paying him a lot, but I didn't realize they were paying him that much plus pay-per-view points, which it just took me back a little bit for the performance he gave. And I don't even want to know how much they would give him if he ended up fighting Floyd Mayweather, but it's so much more money than CM Punk would deserve to go back in the UFC cage. Because, I mean, God forbid, you know, that fight's actually half decent. That's one thing. But if we get something like we did during Bellator happen on Friday, where you got Heather the Heat Hardy trying to work her ground game, and you're just sitting there watching these two guys, CM Punk and Mayweather, just try to swap jiu-jitsu moves, that would just take UFC down multiple levels, I think.
I do think there's one respect where a guy like CM Punk would really, 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 really like to make it happen. Obviously, he would make a lot of money, and you know, nobody's allergic to a lot of money, even as frugal as CM Punk claims to be. But the fact that a CM Punk pay-per-view extravaganza would, in theory, be the biggest fight of the year, and so that would be a way to stick it to the WWE and Vince McMahon, I would think that CM Punk would be all in on something like that. And the pre-fight stuff actually would be kind of good. When you think about the true contrast in styles of Floyd Mayweather as the guy who his whole gimmick is that he's indulgent in life and his vices and the way he spends, versus CM Punk, the guy whose gimmick is that he basically looks like a homeless guy but doesn't drink or do drugs. And I think there would actually be an interesting parallel in there, where I think there would actually be a contrast of styles and someone to root for. Whereas, you know, Mayweather, McGregor, you just found nobody to root for other than, you know, the people that were just making money, and we all felt like we were being swindled. This doesn't feel like a swindle in my mind for some odd reason, but it would be a circus, as are most things. But like Sean said, that is sort of the root of MMA. So it's something that the sport probably will never truly get away from. It's something, a badge they have to wear. All right, guys, let's go to another break. And when we come back, we'll play a very quick round of Fact or Fiction, and we'll work on a new segment about MMA fans getting annoyed with pro wrestling.
When you want to know when the next episode of the PW Torch Livecast is scheduled, or catch up on a show you missed, check out our homepage, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can stream the latest shows right from that page, or download the show, or get a link to subscribe on a podcast app. That's pwtorchlivecast.com for the latest shows, and also catch up on shows you missed at pwtorchlivecast.com.
All right, guys, let's play a round of Fact or Fiction. The game is very easy. I ask you guys a question, you answer with a fact or a fiction, and defend your answer. A bit of an abridged version we're going to play today, but we talked about Nate Diaz and, you know, the sort of no news that always seems to surround him. But let's take it a step further. Sean, Nate Diaz can pass a drug test before Matt Riddle can. Fact or fiction?
Oh man, is there? Can I take it like a draw, or like a like? I'll say fiction, because ain't neither of them passing a random drug test.
Yeah, no, they're not. And, you know, Nate Diaz didn't actually light up on the broadcast, but he sure came close to. I think Matt Riddle actually would. So I'll give the nod to Matt Riddle, like, not being able to pass one sooner. I'm thinking. Sean, excuse me, Rick, who passes the drug test first, Nate Diaz or Matt Riddle?
You know, I think Nate Diaz actually, you know, he's talking about coming back and everything, and he knows that if that happens, he's going to be randomly drug tested. So I think he's cleaning up his act. If he was partaking in the marijuana, he's probably holding back now and trying to guzzle as much cranberry juice as possible, so that if that big money fight comes his way, he's ready to take it. I hope, at least, because I would like to see him come back.
Nick D has another chance. He's going to have to wait about 10 years to clean his system out if he ever wants to fight again, according to his Instagram. All right, and I'll start off with Rick on this one. Friday was a good night for Bellator, fact or fiction?
Okay, so I was thinking about it, and to answer the question, I don't really think it was a good night for Bellator. Because a lot of people on social media, I can't remember the exact hashtag, but it was like Boring Tour or something like that, Bella Boring, or it just was the fights themselves were not very entertaining, in my opinion, and a lot of other people's. The main event, Matt Mitrione defeating Roy Nelson. Mitrione was doing okay on the feet, hitting Roy Nelson with some good straights and some jabs, and he had this swinging uppercut that seemed to – it was almost kind of like – it was almost like a jab. It was just really cool to see Matt Mitrione do it. But then, you know, after a couple minutes, he gets taken down by Roy Nelson. And in the first two rounds, Roy Nelson did nothing with the takedowns. And then in the third fight, he finally got Mitrione down for a while and was getting some ground and pound, but it was a little too late. And then you're just like, well, that's our main event, this three-round fight that, you know, was kind of a sluggish main event. And then, you know, the co-main event was pretty good with Patricki, you know, making quick work of Derek, but the really sore in everybody's spot was the Heather Hardy fight, like I was saying, versus Anna Julanton. And anyways, they were going at it, two professional boxers, and they were trading holds, and you know, they were wrestling each other, and it was unreal. Like, it was white belt level, and I'm no one, you know, I've never trained jiu-jitsu. I don't know what it's like, but I do know what it's like to watch really bad jiu-jitsu, really bad wrestling. And Heather Hardy had Anna in a headlock for about a minute and a half, and it was like watching WWE, where, like, you know, they almost tap out, but they don't, and finally they get to the ropes. It was like that absurd. And Heather was just – people were just destroying that. Even Chael Sonnen was making fun of the fight. He didn't want to compliment it too much because he didn't want to hear about the backlash. That fight was terrible, and it could have been what happened to UFC with CM Punk, but luckily Mickey Gall just went in and took him out and, you know, submitted him. But with these two just playing at it for 18 minutes of fight time, it was bad, really bad.
I'm gonna say it was a bad night for Bellator. Generally has been doing some good things lately, but there's always that downside that any of these Bellator cards can come at. And I believe we hit that downside on Friday, where it was the perfect storm of a pretty wide audience that was watching it, and that Heather Hardy fight specifically just really seemed to get people down. I think it's one thing to have a bad fight, but the way Heather Hardy's been promoted and to have that fight come out like that, I think really left a sour taste in a lot of people's mouth. Sean, good or bad night for Bellator?
Bad for all the reasons you guys talked about.
All right. That's kind of answer I like to hear, concise. All right, let's move on from fact or fiction. That's a great way to end the segment today. But let's go on to our new segment, which I dubbed last week, but I don't know exactly the wording I had on it, so I have to go back and listen. But I think it's Pro Wrestling Makes MMA Guy Mad. And the whole crux of this segment is we read something on the internet where either a pro wrestling media member or, an MMA media member or clearly MMA fans get mad of any injection of pro wrestling into their MMA. And this week, we're actually going to be reading some comments to a tweet that TMZ sent out. We talked about earlier how TMZ just like finds people in airports and asks them questions and passes that off for news. That's not what we're discussing here, though, but it was actually a TMZ caught up with Randy Orton and asked him about Ronda Rousey's presence in the WWE. And he gave a very, you know, bland answer, just saying, hey, she could be one of the best ever, but she still has to prove herself. I don't know why that's news, but it was news. It's shareable. They'll get a lot of clicks, whatever. But more fun than that boring milquetoast Randy Orton match style question and answer that happened were some of the comments that got left under one of the tweets. And I'll just read these out. Not exactly chronological, but there's a bit of a mismatch here. And I'll keep the names of these tweeters out of it because, you know, we want to protect the innocent or the very guilty and silly in this case. Let me just read some of them. The first comment, wrestle? Question mark. He meant to say act. And, of course, act is in quotation marks, so that guy is very angry at this whole situation. And then the next comment, which was in the second comment, yeah, but Rousey actually wrestles. So WTF is he talking about? That guy, of course, very mad at it. Wrestles is in quotation marks, but with only the single line. So I'm wondering, I'm trying to read the subtext there. And there's a poor guy who's responding to all these people trying to clarify, like, he's not talking about her, but, like, don't try to. Okay. And then, another commenter. He's aware they, quote, wrestle in MMA, too. And that does it. So we have three tweets where the people totally not getting the context of what she's talking about, who are very mad at the fact that either Randy Orton is, they believe, is unaware that there's a difference between grappling and mixed martial arts and grappling and pro wrestling, or the fact they're just mad that he's speaking about it. But I thought it was funny, like, such a non-story, and these people are so mad about the fact that he says she's got to prove herself, or that she already clearly does wrestle. We have not seen anything out of Ronda Rousey. We don't know if she can lock up. We don't know if she could take a bump. We do know she's not very good at pointing at signs. So I love the way the people, the Ronda Rousey thing just brings out the anger on all sides of the argument. Any takes on the angry Ronda Rousey takes here, Sean?
Oh, I just enjoy it. I mean, anytime you get people to comment on what wrestling is and isn't, that have obviously never watched or hate it, it's pretty entertaining.
Right. And the other thing I thought was kind of funny about this is, like, well, she's not really a wrestler, even in the context of MMA. She's a judo player who, you know, throws people to the ground and breaks their arm. We've never looked at her as this great jiu-jitsu player. And when she tried to change up her style, she tried to be like this boxing striker person that ultimately seemed to cost her MMA career. So I have no idea where the heck these people are coming from. What do you think, Rick?
Well, I think that this confusion with wrestlers in quotation marks has just proven Vince McMahon's theory correct, and we should be calling it wrestling. It's sports entertainment, and that's what she's going to be doing. She's a sports entertainer, and she'll be sports entertaining us. So, you know, if you would have, Randy Orton would just get, stuck with the script, this would have all been solved by then. I bet he's going to, well, Randy Orton's so such a big wrestler, he probably won't get any backlash, but I guarantee you, if that was someone else that was like in NXT or something like that, he'd have been in a lot of trouble for using that word.
Yeah, and I don't think he actually even did specifically within the quotations of the story, but it's a fair point. I don't necessarily disagree with you, but if Wade Keller hears you saying the word sports entertainer, man, you will never be on this podcast again. So, fair warning.
I know. It was all in jest. I heard him and Todd Martin talking about some of the most annoying things that happen in wrestling, and I think that was him and Todd Martin's number one.
Yeah, so when I send him an email next time, I'm going to
steer clear of saying it with sincerity.
I'm going to put superstar with a capital S so he can totally lose his mind on that one. All right.
Yeah.
On that WWE note, let's take one more quick break, and then we'll quickly look ahead to this Sunday's WWE Elimination Chamber pay-per-view.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Back at you. One final segment here on this show before we got to get out of here. Look, we got a pay-per-view this Sunday within the WWE or network special, however you want to call it. It'll be a Raw pay-per-view, the Elimination Chamber. Tons of multi-man matches, but not a ton of total matches announced, so we could actually breeze through this rather quickly. The first thing we'll talk about is we got Asuka taking on Nia Jax in a match where I guess Asuka's Royal Rumble victory isn't necessarily on the line. But if Nia Jax wins, she will be inserted into whatever women's championship match that Asuka is in. I don't think there's any question here. I think Asuka's going to roll fairly easily. Should be a decent match. These two had some pretty good matches at NXT. Who do you got in this one, Sean?
Yeah, give me Asuka. I don't think they're going to end the streak on a non-WrestleMania at this point.
I don't think so either, but just keep in mind, last year at the pay-per-view before WrestleMania, they ended Charlotte's pay-per-view streak for, like, no apparent reason, just because. So that could happen, but highly, highly doubt
it. Good point.
What do you think, Rick? Asuka rolls here?
Yeah, I think it'll be a bloated squash match where Nia Jax will get in some offense and look pretty good, but Asuka will look dominant by the end of it.
And in the other women's match announced so far for this show, first ever women's Elimination Chamber match, you have the champion Alexa Bliss defending against Bayley, Mandy Rose, Mickie James, Sasha Banks, and Sonya Deville. I think the smart money at this point, without looking at the odds, would be on Alexa retaining, because I think the big payoff will be her title reign ending at WrestleMania to whoever challenges her. do you guys see any altering of those plans, Rick?
No, I think the most dramatic thing will be whether or not this is either the, you know, the co-main event or middle of the pay-per-view, or if they decide to put this one on last like they did with the Women's Rumble. I know that Rousey's not going to come out and be a surprise anything as far as being involved in this match or anything like that, but her involvement in that night with the contract signing might elevate this chamber.
Yeah, it's hard to say. You've got a bit of a lack of star power, I would say, in that. And just, I mean, the fact that you have to have Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville to fill it out doesn't quite scream main event unless something big is planned. I'm interested to see what Sasha Banks does in this. Her story arc recently has been interesting for a change after being so long of a very repetitive story arc that she's had on the show. It's actually got interesting lately, so I'm curious to see where that goes. What do you think, Sean? Does Bliss retain over here?
Well, first of all, how dare you? I think Alexa Bliss is going to retain here. I do think that's a smart play and the one that makes sense, which means that they probably won't do it. But I do think they do have Bliss retained.
And just for context, I can only refer to her as Bliss right now because I have a little device in my room, in my living room here, that catches it as me asking it questions. So I can't say the name of that device, and it's not a plug for anybody. I said it the first time, and it told me there was no notifications for me. So they can make a Super Bowl commercial out of that, I guess. All right, and in the what I believe will probably be the main event, the first ever 7-person Elimination Chamber matchup. You got a bunch of heavy hitters in this thing, although I think the result is fairly obvious. Braun Strowman taking on Elias, taking on Finn Balor, taking on John Cena, taking on Roman Reigns, taking on Seth Rollins, taking on The Miz. Pretty obvious that Roman Reigns is going to roll here. He's got that match with Brock Lesnar that I think at this point would almost, it's so preordained that I don't think anything could undo that. There's been, although people maybe aren't so happy about that match happening, there's not like a Daniel Bryan figure to upset their plans this year. So I think that is definitely going to happen, whether anybody likes it or not. Are both of you in agreement here?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. These matches should be pretty good, but the pay-per-view in between WrestleMania and the Royal Rumble always feels like such a nothing pay-per-view where they just kind of got to put the chess pieces in motion. But the problem is that the Mania card has been so predictable recently that there just seems to be no intrigue of these. I'm actually excited about this idea of the single brand pay-per-views going away. I know there's some hesitation about them lasting 5 hours like WrestleMania once a month. That would be just terrible, specifically for people like us that watch both a lot of wrestling and MMA. That would kill any idea of a social life that any of us could possibly dream of having. But I think we should discuss what will be the biggest, the most newsworthy item on this show, which will be they're teasing this as Ronda Rousey signing her Raw contract. And unless you just started watching wrestling yesterday, there's never been a contract signing or a wedding in the world of professional wrestling, with the exception of Macho Man and Elizabeth, that has ever gone off without a hitch. Even Don Marie and Al Wilson had to take off their clothes before finishing their ceremony in my lovely city of Albuquerque. So, guys, what do we expect here with Ronda Rousey? Does she start her program with Stephanie, or does something else get involved? What are your expectations, Sean?
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, it'll be a program with Stephanie to get started here. And I expect it to be very terrible. And I'm kind of looking forward to it just for that, just to see how bad it's going to be, the interaction between these guys. And for clarification purposes, even the wedding between Macho Man and Elizabeth went awry when Jake Snake Roberts had his cobra pop out of one of their presents.
Didn't that happen? After the fact, on the Coliseum video.
It may have. I don't know. I just remembered the gift being marred by the cobra, but it may well have been after the fact.
Well, that's a great gift. I don't know how you're saying that could more. I think I would love to get Damien as a wedding gift. Who wouldn't? Rick, what do you think is going to happen here in this Ronda segment?
I agree with you guys. I think we'll get Stephanie involved and somehow down the road get Triple H and figure out who Rousey's partner will be. I just want to start a drinking game for every time Rousey points at the sign awkwardly, the WrestleMania sign during that contract signing. I think I'm going to take at least 4 to 5 shots if that game were to occur, because that's the one thing that sticks out in my mind the most about her appearance at the Rumble, is just pointing up the sign and smiling. And I heard Wade Keller talking about this, and Todd Martin and Bruce Mitchell, about how it's kind of a cliche that would be nice to go away, but sometimes it's understood. But for this contract signing, at least, if she does it once, that's fine, but don't do it again. You know, just like either cut your promo or do what you need to do, but stop pointing at the sign.
Yeah, this is a big moment for them in the whole Rousey project. The ball's really in their court. They kind of threw it all out there very raw, no pun intended, at the Royal Rumble. And it wasn't a good segment, although the moment, I think, was enough for a lot of people to just be like, whoa, she's here. That shock, they're not going to have that to their advantage on Sunday. They're actually going to have to produce something good. And I actually have I don't know how good Rousey was going to be, but I have confidence that they'll probably produce a pretty good segment. Because I think one thing we've seen, especially with the booking of the men's and the women's Royal Rumble match, this isn't the same company that in 2014 and 2015 just seemed blissfully unaware of how their live audiences were going to react to things. They seem like they have a bit of a trolley aspect to them and they're booking right now, so I'm sure Stephanie will be laying it on as thick as possible, you know, really meant to grade at the hardcore fans, and I think it'll be done very deliberate, and I hope it comes across well. And you know, Stephanie, say what you want about her, and I think her character is definitely a strain in general on the product. She's very good at executing that character, so I think if Rousey could play off it correctly and in a very meaningful way, it can come across well. I don't know if it will, but it's intriguing. I mean, it does say something whenever you have a pay-per-view with two of what's considered, you know, the most brutal match in the company, the Elimination Chamber, and the thing I'm looking forward to the most is an MMA fighter signing a piece of paper. That doesn't speak well for the rest of the card in general.
Right.
But, you know, she, I mean, like it or not, she is kind of the biggest star this side of the John Cena and Brock Lesnar in the company, despite only making the one appearance on this recent run. So there's definitely a lot on the line. I'm definitely looking excited to watching that and to seeing how that's going to play out and discussing it next week on this show. So we'll close it there. Sean, your social media has returned to a somewhat level of normalcy recently. Where can people follow you and what can they expect?
You can follow me at Sean Ennis, S-H-A-W-N-E-N-N-I-S. I have slowed down my Eagles gloating for the time being. I can't guarantee that it won't come back at some given point, but for now we've returned to the realm of MMA and pro wrestling for the most part. I don't tweet a lot to fill up your timeline with a bunch of stuff, but I tweet at opportune times. I also want to hit one parting shot here, and I have brought this up before, and I know it was either you, Rob, or Zach that was with me before, but I want to get a sense. If you disagree with me vehemently, hit me up on Twitter about this. But Brendan Fitzgerald, the guy that did the play-by-play last night for the UFC, I don't understand why you would fire Mike Goldberg and bring in Mike Goldberg Jr. Like, am I crazy? Like, his voice sounds very similar. He's got his own kind of Goldberg light-isms, like, you know, inside the octagon, stuff like that. It sounds just the same, and it blows my mind that they have this guy. I'm sure he's a lovely guy, and he's actually a little bit better than Goldberg was, which is a low bar. You know, he's not John Anik by any means, but he's better than Goldberg was at least. But I have a hard time even processing what he's saying and noticing that he's that much better, because he sounds just like Mike Goldberg.
90 seconds.
And the things he says a lot of times just sound like Mike Goldberg, and it's driving me crazy. So if I'm crazy, hit me up and let me know, because I can't process what's going on my screen when he's in there doing commentary.
Well, Sean, I think we've just officially delved into the world of conspiracy theory. Maybe we're like the Alex Jones of MMA podcast, because 2 weeks ago I made the case that Jimmy Smith really was terrible. Joe Rogan, and they were the same person. So I think there's actually a double agent thing going on with Fitzgerald and Smith actually being Rogan and Goldberg. So we're definitely on to something.
That's
that's the thing, is it actually adds to it that Jimmy Smith looks like Joe Rogan. So, like, you have Jimmy Smith and you have Brendan Fitzgerald. It's like an alternate dimension Goldberg and Rogan.
Rick, you got anything to plug this week?
I'm just glad to be on the show. Thank you for having me, guys. It was a lot of fun.
All right, and you can follow me on Twitter, Rob M. Vallejos, RobMVallejos. And you can follow the brand as well, at MMA Torch, to follow all the Torch brands. Regular PW Torch, PW Torch VIP, PW Torch Livecast, PW Podcast, and of course, as always, MMA Torch. For Sean and Rick, I am Robert, and we will talk to you next week.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Cutter Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the SE Editor format of the Weight Cutter Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.
Yeah.